Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Kristen and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 182 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, TK? What's up, everybody? 182. Who's coming to the table sitting down with us sharing space?
We've got one of the greatest coming on, man. We've got Layla Ali in the house. Really excited, dude.
Yeah, excellent. Me as well. This is one of those, obviously, guys listening, there's certain guests who come on board that we just send a message and they're just ready to rock and roll. And then certain guests that take a little bit of time because of their schedule and what they're doing. And Layla's one of these guests. It's been a while for us working on her getting here. So we're really stoked to bring her to you guys.
Yeah, sometimes the best things in life take time. And I think this is one of the ones. But for me, as I was explaining when I didn't hit record about 5 minutes ago, Muhammad Ali is one of my absolute idols. You know, as a 35-year-old grown man, I've still got two pieces of memorabilia of inspirational stuff. It's just some framed. One's a framed him and Michael Jordan.
Oh, wow.
Called The Greatest. And then the other one's three fight special, or the Rumble in the Jungle and the two Frazier fights. And they're just all kind of all memorabilia up and framed up. It's two of my cherished, real cherished things. So
I agree with you about Ali and his impact globally. Guys listening, if you're not familiar with this interview, in the early 90s, at the peak of the Arsenio Hall show in America, he had on the same couch, he had Sugar Ray Leonard, he had Mike Tyson, and then he had Muhammad Ali. And guys, go to YouTube and watch this. It'll make your heart feel warm. Because at the time, you had Ray, who was a world champ. You had Tyson, who was the most feared man.
What year was
this? The interview came out in like 91.
So he would have been about 8 years out of retirement.
Yeah. Ali's last fight, you know, he fought Larry. And I think 82?
Two, I think.
Yeah, the year we were born. But that interview just showcases and highlights the impact Ali had on the young generation at the time. Because Tyson was only in his early 20s, and you get to see the reverence of Mike and Ray towards Muhammad Ali, and it just really makes your heart feel warm. And bringing his daughter on, and we've had Cal Fussman on, and we've had Holmes on, and George Foreman on. It's like, even though Muhammad Ali is no longer with us, it still kind of feels, now this is his blood, that we get to share space with him as well.
Yeah, it brings us a little bit closer. But I love the old Muhammad when he was retired. You know, the more vulnerability side. You know,
he
had it. Unfortunately, he got Parkinson, and he put on a little bit of weight. It showed a little bit, because he was the king of the world for so long, it showed the world that kind of that he was just a normal human being, and he had feelings, and he got sick just like anyone else.
Yeah, that's an important part. I know you and I are both boxing junkies. What was Layla's nickname?
Her one was...
Sting like a bee? Or bee stinging?
No, I've got it. It is... She be stinging.
Yeah, Layla, she be stinging Ali. She was a great fighter in her own right, retired 24-0.
21 knockouts.
21 KOs, man.
Four world titles. But just on to our guest today.
Yep.
It is really, well, for me, I've been tuning into her podcast a lot, and I've been getting a lot out of that. You know, I first got word of that because I'm a big fan of Russell Wilson, and he was her first guest on the podcast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they connected. Both ways.
Russell Wilson was a great quarterback. He played at University of Wisconsin, transferred from NC State. Always a perennial Super Bowl team when he's at the helm of quarterback.
Yeah, I think a lot of people relate to Russell because he's a small guy. So he's had to beat the odds. And for a guy that's 5'11", he's, you know, him and Drew Brees are these guys that are really just flying the flag and saying, well, you don't have to be 6'4", you don't have to be 6'5". You can be 5'11 and dominate.
I'm glad you brought Drew up. I almost messaged you yesterday, but you're a busy guy. The Saints, man. Drew Brees, 113 years old. He'd be lucky if he's 5'11". Brees is probably more like 5'9". He coming out of University of Purdue, he was a Heisman guy. And you remember he went to San Diego, the Chargers. This seems like years ago.
Nice.
Had a great year. Hurt his shoulder. They gave up on him. And then
they traded for Rivers.
And then you see all these other guys, Rivers, Eli, fall to the wayside. You know, Eli won a few rings. Brees won a ring, a couple MVPs. And still, in 2018, Brees is one game away from the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
did you know that?
Yeah, it's really
miraculous
exciting
comeback.
The way they held out, what's her name, Panthers on.
Yes.
During the week,
it was just great.
A remarkable finish. I thought Cameron Newton was going to snatch that game.
Newton 6'6", Brees is 5'9". You don't have to be tall. I wish somebody would have told me that when I was younger.
Yeah, so that was one of her first guests, but she's had, because her autobiography was written in 2002, which is quite interesting. But she's been actually taking out extracts from the actual book and putting it onto the podcast, which has been quite powerful, especially for her to kind of say it now, which is kind of, what is it, 2017?
2018. Last year. She was 25 when that autobiography came out.
Yeah, so things have changed and, you know, she's grown as a human being. But it was interesting to see the perspectives that she had because she didn't have a great relationship with her parents either. So it's really open. I think it was very therapeutic. So it's been interesting to just see how that kind of changed her life.
Yeah, well, I'm stoked to bring her on. It's good to hear these stories, and guys, we're excited to bring it to you.
Yeah, for sure. So guys, if you really enjoyed today's episode, please share it with your family and friends. It really helps us grow the show. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. You can also catch it on Stitcher, or you can get all the show notes at www.thevisionboardpodcast.com.
We appreciate you guys. Special shout out Timothy Hart getting our subscription, iTunes 5-star ratings up, sharing it with his boys. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Timothy. Big shout out to you. And guys, we really hope you really like this episode. We introduced Layla Ali. All right, guys, our special guest is Layla Ali. Layla is one of the most successful athletes of all time, and her path to success is an interesting one. She's the daughter of the greatest, Muhammad Ali, while a rocky childhood also led to a stint in juvenile hall. Facing her challenges head-on, she rose to achieve a remarkable career in both sport and life. Her impressive boxing career, including 4 world titles and a 24-win and 0-loss career. Post-boxing, she continues to flourish, and she won Celebrity Chop twice, while her passion for health has seen her launch her podcast, Layla Ali Lifestyle, while her cookbook, Food for Life, is due out in the coming weeks. We welcome to the podcast, Layla Ali. Layla, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for that nice introduction. You got a lot in there.
Right, Layla?
Take a breath,
man. I know. Wow. Thanks for sharing space with us. And after Tristan gave you that intro, I guess we're done. But
right.
He already covered everything. No, like he ever mentioned, there's a lot of your body of work, and you know you're still young. You're just getting started. Let's open up your book, Food for Life, a little bit with our fans and listeners listening about what that is and what your intentions are with that.
Well, I've been cooking since I was about 9 years old. I was cooking before I was boxing. So a lot of people look at me now like a boxer cooking. Well, actually, you know, I took a detour when I started boxing. So being that my mom didn't cook, I got in the kitchen and taught myself how to cook and did a lot of raising of myself as a child, which I wrote about in my first book, Reach. But yeah, I love to cook. And over the years, through being an athlete, being a mom, just with all the research that I've done on the foods that we're eating now, you know, their lack of nutrients, you know, the issues with all the pesticides and herbicides and genetically modified foods and all these things. You know, I kind of took my love of cooking and comfort food and incorporated them into this book by making them healthier, more nutritious, but also having that flavor that we love. So, you know, my intention, since you asked, was to kind of not only provide people with recipes that they're going to love and foods that I've been cooking for many, many years, but also just to kind of give them some information and background without overwhelming them. So, you know, as I talk about some of the recipes, as you know, in the introduction of the book, I talk about, you know, why it's so important to eat healthy and also give people just a lot of good information that they can incorporate into their everyday lives without feeling like, you know, man, this person's trying to change me and change the way I eat, and everything's always so overwhelming anyway when it comes to nutrition. So although I do want to delve deeper in my next book, so I thought this was just a good way to get in and get people back on track to get healthy again.
Layla, I'm also a strength coach, and a lot of my clients, it's the toughest thing when we're trying to get healthy is nutrition, the food on our plates. And I think a lot of us create these thought prisons with excuses, maybe the way we were raised, and it's tough for people to change that pattern of behavior consciously. When you're dealing with people you care about, or maybe, you know, fans that look up to you regarding specifically eating right, what sort of excuses do you hear most commonly?
Oh my God. Like you said, there's so many. I mean, I'm a no nonsense, straightforward kind of person. And I like to get past the bullshit, you know, and at the end of the day, I love to eat too. And I'm not a fanatic. Like I will go get a glazed donut or three on my day, which I call my cheat day. Some people don't even like to use that word anymore, but for me, it is a cheat day. Like I'm going to eat whatever I want. Mm. And so I still am connected in that way of like understanding how it feels to crave some food, this junk food or not good for us. So that's why I do well with those types of people a lot of times, and I can help them because I understand the feeling. I always tell them, I'm like, there's a fat girl inside of me, trust me. Well, they just wants to eat all the time. It's an ongoing struggle for me. Like, I'm 10 pounds heavier than I want to be right now because I was working on my cookbook and, you know, eating and not really following my own normal, you know, daily routine. And, you know, I know how to get it off, so I'm not worried about it. But I'm taking longer than I even expected because, you know, I got stress going on in my life, all these different things coming out with the cookbook. It's hard for me to get back on track, you know, so because I have these different cravings. But to answer your question, I mean, I hear all kinds of stuff. And you know, unfortunately, we're living in a time where every corner you turn, there's something in your face that's giving you all the opportunities to eat bad and to make the wrong choices and making it easier for you because everything is working against you. So I just want to say it's not because we're weak. It's not because, you know, we just can't be disciplined. It's hard. It's like, you know what I'm saying? So I think that the challenge is understanding that you have to take it day by day and that it does have to become a lifestyle change. And for me and for what I try to tell people is that you have to make it bigger. You know, you have to find a reason. For me, I'm the person that's all about health for me. I don't want to be that person that gets sick and feels like if it's because of something I didn't do. So I'm always, you know, I want to be here for my kids. So I have to find a bigger reason for it to be just 10 pounds or vanity reasons, you know, because at that point, you know, I'm just going to put my Spanx on and make it work, you know. Yep. But when I think about health, you know, it encourages me and inspires me to actually do better. So I know that was a very long-winded answer. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, we like long answers.
Fantastic.
All right. Then less work for you, right? Layla. I got a podcast.
No, you don't have to apologize.
Nah, not at all. Layla, I was going to ask you about a couple of the recipes. I've heard you speaking about a few of the things I know that you've got like a mac and cheese recipe that's healthy. You hide kind of vegetables and things like that. And I was having an interesting discussion with my mum last night. And she told me when we were growing up that she used to mash down vegetables and make burgers out of it. Because that was the only how me and my brother would eat.
What?
And she would wrap it in old McDonald's wrappers.
What?
That was her trick.
That is funny.
That is crazy.
Your mom is a genius. Yeah, she's an OG. Right? I love it.
Yeah. Did you have any little tricks out there for the parents?
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is like I'm really not inventing anything new, okay? Because I've seen a whole cookbook on like sneaky sauces and things like that with a really just different recipes of different vegetables and fruits blended down to make different colors, whether you're using baking or whether you're making spaghetti or whether you need, you know, a white sauce or a red sauce, you know, a green sauce. So like, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, a lot of people still haven't been introduced to these things in the way that I use them in my recipes. So some of the tricks that I have are the same as your mom's. Like I even, not only for kids, but for myself and my family, I'm like, okay, we love tacos in this house. My kids love spaghetti. They love mac and cheese. So I'm not going to necessarily stop making those things, but I'm always trying new types of pasta so I can get away from the white wheat pasta. And trust me, there's been many, many, many nights where they're like, gross, we don't want to eat it because they don't like the texture of the pasta until I find the right one. So there's a lot of trial and error, and luckily I've been able to do all of that so that people who have my book don't have to, where it still tastes amazing and the texture is great. But like with my secret white sauce, you know, you're just blending down cauliflower, white beans, and just the other, you know, ingredients that I have in there that really don't have that much of a strong flavor. And it's really about how much you put in. So you have to be careful of the amount that you put in because people's taste buds sometimes can pick certain things up and you don't want to change the flavor.
Yeah.
But yeah, and even like with my ground turkey, I mean, I just had tacos the other night. I'll always take about 4 or 5 zucchini, put them in the food processor, take the green skin off for the kids because, you know, if they see that, that's it. And then put it in the food processor. And then when I'm sauteing my ground turkey, you know, I'll cook the turkey pretty much and then put the zucchini in and cook it for like another 5 or 10 minutes and season it up really well. And you don't even know it's there. So it's just another way for me, even as an adult, to get vegetables in every single meal, you know, is how I try to add whatever it is that I can. So,
Layla, you know, you were a professional boxer, and to do that, it involves cutting weight. And, you know, you've also given birth to 2 children as well. So I can only imagine the rebound and effect of gaining weight and trying to lose it as well. And you just spoke about being a few pounds overweight. In terms of yourself giving us insights into how effectively you were able to manage all that, can we get some insights into, you know, your relationship with food, having to undergo all that sort of thing?
meaning just in general, up and down and weight over the years? And then, like when you say manage all of it, what do you mean?
Yeah, so what I mean is, like, in terms of, you know, having to go through that, because that's not a normal thing, to having to cut weight for sports. And then,
oh, right,
especially for us males, we don't have to go through the scenario of having to give birth and then all the hormones, okay, and different changes and things like that. So I just wanted to get insights into how that kind of changed maybe perception towards food.
Well, luckily, you know, God created our bodies in such a beautiful, magnificent way that our body is like a computer, right? And it can withstand so much. And our bodies are always 100% of the time working on our behalf to try to stay healthy, to try to keep up with all of the abuse and the toxins and the this and the that. Luckily, we don't have to think about, you know what I'm saying, just even just blinking and breathing and all of those things and that we do naturally. We don't have to think about. There's a million things going on inside of our body. But as an athlete, you know, when I used to fight, I'm naturally a big girl. I'm 5'11". I've got big bones. I mean, physically big. I got big hands. I have big feet. Like, I wear a size 12 shoe. That's like a size 10 in men's.
Yeah.
So that's a big chick, you know. And when I was fighting, at about 100, anywhere between 163 to 168. 68 was the weight limit when I was a super middleweight champ. And when I was young, when I was maybe 25, 26, I never had trouble making weight. Like, I literally could eat before the weigh-in, you know, it could eat breakfast, weigh-in could be like one or two, I'd be fine. Then as I got older, I started walking around at like 175 and would have to come down, you know, the week of the fight. And then I've even been as much as 10 pounds heavier, you know,
wow,
and had to take off 10 pounds. And that's not a good situation for me, especially, I mean, it's male fighters do it all the time and certain fighters do it all the time. But for me, you know, that wasn't a good situation, because obviously you're going to be dehydrated because you're really taking off a lot of water weight when you're taking off the weight that week of the fight. You're not really getting all the nutrients that you need. So that was stressful on my body, but I think balanced out with the fact that I've never done drugs. I don't drink, you know, I've always been really clean. So I didn't have those abuses on my body. So I think that it kind of just balanced out. And then when I got pregnant, I retired in 2007. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to have to figure out a way to stay fit, because 168 was not natural for me. That's somebody who's working out like 3 times a day, 5 days a week. Natural for me is more like 180, and I'm actually 200 right now. Remember I told you, you know, that 180 I'm talking about back then. Now 185 is really a good weight for me. But and people don't even like to talk about weight so much, but I talk about weight because I weighed in for a living. You know, I know where I'm supposed to be, right? So I could tell with this extra muffin top around my waist, you know, when I put my jeans on, I could tell exactly where that 15 pounds is, even though everyone's like, you look great. I'm like, trust me, I know what that is. That's those donuts. No, I'm joking. But I'm trying to get around to an answer, because your question was very broad. But I would say that, you know, and then when you have children, you just know you're going to gain weight, you know, and I just gave myself mentally, because I'm very strong mentally. I would say that's my strongest point in life. About me is that I'm very strong mentally. So I went into it telling myself, you're going to gain weight, you're going to lose weight, and giving yourself that opportunity to have that time, because it's only 10 months of your life, right? When you look back at the span of your life that you go through this. So I just let my body do what it needed to do. And I said, I'm gonna do what I need to do to get the weight off. And it took me a whole year, because I was nursing. And I think that when you're nursing, you keep more weight on. Yes, your stomach goes back down flatter, but you still keep on that extra fat. And it wasn't until I actually had to get out there and run like 5 miles, like 4 or 5 days a week, to get all the weight off. Because as an athlete, I noticed that, like, I can't just go do yoga or go do a light impact workout that some people can do and get the effects from it, because my body is used to being pushed so hard that it kind of looks at me like, so what? What's that? That's not going to do anything. It doesn't budge. So I have to really work really hard when I'm trying to get weight off. So, like, you know, it's just been a balance for me. And I have noticed now, at anyone who's over, you know, in their 40s, you notice that your body does change. You know, now I have to spend more time actually on recovery, stretching, and doing all the things that I should have been doing all along, but now I have to do it if I want to stay healthy. And I have to stop thinking that I can just binge eat one day on my cheat day and get away with it, because I used to be able to eat bad. I'm talking about after a fight, I would eat whatever I want. Everything that I dreamed of having when I was getting ready for the fight that I couldn't, whether it was pizza or fried chicken or cobbler Alamo, just eating out. I would do that for 2 weeks and I wouldn't gain any weight. It's like now I can't do that, you know? So it's just been an evolution, and I've been just kind of, you know, just paying attention to my body and still just appreciating every different stage, because if we're blessed enough to get older, we're all going to go through it. So I don't worry about it.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Layla, I love sharing space with people who play on their strengths. I mean, we live in a society where it's so much easier to focus on what we haven't done or what we failed at, but playing on your strengths, and you mentioned that mental strength is a big player in your life and your career. And it leads me to my question about, do you feel, you know, I wanted to phrase this question as a nature versus nurture sort of thing. Our environment molds who we are today, but genetics have to do a lot to do with that as well. We all go through our own moments of adversity. Some people have single moments that really change their lives. So, loaded question here. Do you feel that mental strength, your greatest strength, if you had to balance it out, how much of that was nature, you overcoming your own adversity as a younger woman? How much of that was or nature being, you know, the daughter of Muhammad Ali, nurture being the environment aspect? And then also maybe give some advice to our listeners who are struggling with the mental side of things in order to take their lives to the next level.
Okay, so I definitely think that, you know, we're born with certain characteristics and temperament, right? Because as a child, like old enough to remember anything, I've been a fighter. Like I've had my own mind, you know. It's like I take pride in being different. I take pride and I want to go the other way than everyone's going. Like that's what's cool to me. Whereas some people feel more comfortable like being in the in crowd and kind of doing what everyone does and not rocking the boat. Like I'm going to rock the boat. Like, and I'm totally comfortable with it. I'm comfortable with the confrontation that comes along with it. And I'm very comfortable taking a stand and being a rebel. I'm talking about as a child. Like I used to get in trouble. That's how I ended up in juvenile hall, which you said in your introduction. I wrote about that in my book. Because I was just all over the place. I got into a lot of trouble because of my ways and that energy being directed the wrong way. You know, I had a dysfunctional childhood growing up, and that's what led me to get into trouble, because I see in my daughter, my 6-year-old, she's exactly like I was, except she has a different upbringing. She has a different situation where she's not going to go down the same road that I went down.
Yep.
But I hate it, but I love it at the same time. It's a struggle. So she was born with that. And my husband, like when I'm like, and she has me like at the end of my rope, my husband's like, don't get mad at my baby. She acts just like you. And I'm like, oh God, you know, so I'm like fighting myself, but as a 6-year-old, you know, but I love it. But at the same time, it's hard. I'm like, I got to mold this girl. But the thing is that, the same two people can face the exact same situation in life and they're going to handle it differently. And I think that, you know, it's about the mindset and, you know, the conversations that we have with ourselves are really the ones that get you, you know, like I will say, I can talk about my positive things about me because I can also talk about the negative things about me. So I'm very comfortable. Like some people aren't even comfortable saying anything about themselves. Like I have a really good this or I have a really good that, because they feel like they're bragging. They care what people think. Like I don't care what people think. So that's the first thing that you have to get rid of, is stop worrying about what everyone else thinks and what everyone else wants you to do, you know, because you only have one life to live, just one, you know. And the biggest worst regret I could have is not living my life the way that I want to live it and trying to please everybody else and still ending up at a dead road, you know. So it's just like I rather end up at the end of the road, at a dead road, a dead end, I meant to say, sorry, because I led myself there opposed to listening to this idiot beside me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's just that you have to learn to figure out what it is in life that's going to make you happy, what's going to make you thrive, what you can be passionate about, you know, and kind of just kind of go in that direction and surround yourself with people who are going to support you, who can teach you something, who can guide you, you know, because you're going to become like the people that you're around. We hear that all the time, you know, but it's totally true. So I've gone through stages in my life where I look around and I'm the one that everybody's feeding off of. You know, I'm not learning anything or getting anything back. And then I'm like, damn, I love these people. They're cool, but I need to find some more friends that can actually teach me something, that can inspire me, that can, I don't want to be the strongest, smartest, you know, toughest one all the time in the group. You know, I need to be able to grow as well. So, you know, that's something that I've been focusing on a lot lately. And I think that, I don't even remember what the original question was. You wanted me to say something to the listeners. But I think that, you know, one of the questions I get asked a lot is about confidence, and I haven't figured out a way to describe to people how to become more confident. But I know that a lot of what holds people back is their fear of failure, their fear of, you know, just they don't want to be uncomfortable. But I'm telling you, like a lot of things that I do, I have to force myself. Like if I there's things I'm talking about when it comes to just hosting jobs or certain types of shows. At first, you know, like in my career, I'd be like, I don't know if that's for me. You know, I don't know if I should do that. And then I have someone in my life who's my business partner now, used to be my manager, that she'd have to push me. And she's like, Layla, no, you can do it. You should do it. And then I'm like, okay, well, now that I've talked to someone, we've got our strategy, we've been methodical. And like, is this a good look for me? Should I do it? Okay, fine. Now I'm going to say, fuck it. I'm just going to push myself. And I'm going to, even if I'm scared, I'm going to do it anyway. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? So once you're able to do that, that's when it becomes easier for you to do, but you have to take that first leap. And no matter what it is, you know, in your personal life, in your professional life, spiritually, you know, you just have to be able to push yourself past that fear. And then everything else kind of just opens up, you know, for you, and walk in your own truth. You know, love who you are, love the things that are different about you, and the things that you want to fix, work on fixing them, come up with a plan. You don't just talk about it, be about it, like make it happen. So that's how I approach life, pretty much.
Powerful. Powerful.
Hey, Layla, did you have a lot of struggles growing up in terms of, even now, you know, your last name's Ali. Is it hard for you to kind of have a radar on who's trying to use you for your surname and trying to establish who your real friends are?
It's not a, oh my God, like, I can see that in my sleep. Like, it's not hard at all. You know, growing up, was the discovery period as a kid. You know, it's like naturally, you know, you people want to try to be around you. But even now, like, you know, I have to appreciate the love for my father. You know, when people say, oh, your dad's Muhammad Ali, they have a story, they want to tell me how he changed his life, I have no problem with that. That's fine. I don't expect people to. I went to a doctor's appointment today, and, you know, the people there, like, had no idea. The girl who was signing me in had no idea who I was, and she said, I told her my memory sometimes. I said something about my memory. She's like, well, why is your memory? I said, oh, from boxing. And she's like, you're a boxer? Oh my God. Oh, how'd you get into that? And she started asking me all these questions. And I was like, oh God, do I really have to go through this? Like, she had no idea. But
that's good.
You know, so yeah, like, I loved it. I thought it was great. So I never walk around like people should know who I am. And, you know, even if they know my father, they may not know me. I'm okay with that. You know, so it's just like, I really do live my life like a regular person. And it's kind of irritating. I'd rather people not know who I am. In fact, it was so much so that when I was in school, I used to use my mom's last name, because back then, before I became a public person, I could be anonymous. You know, now it's like people know me. If it's not from boxing, it's from Dancing with the Stars, or from, you know, the show I'm doing now on Oprah's network, or a commercial they saw me on, or whatever the case may be. You know, one of the reality shows, Celebrity Apprentice, whatever it is, Chopped, you know. So it's hard for me, and I rather people not know me, you know. But I'm not the type of person you can try to use. I just don't. That opportunity really just isn't even there, because I have a very, like, no-nonsense way about me, and people like that kind of don't even try it. It's just really plain to see when somebody's trying to get something from you. So, like, I just kind of nip it at the bud. Like, what is it that you want? Like, just tell me up front. And I know how to say no, and I know how to cut people off, like, really quickly. So I don't have that problem. I'm sure some of my sisters probably do, because, you know, there's 7 of us total. So I'm sure they probably deal with some of that, but I don't have that issue.
Layla, I grew up in a house full of women, my 3 sisters, my mother, and it's always been, I just thought it was normal for men to look up to women, to be around empowered women. And you mentioned, and not all, you know, sometimes our society, obviously a lot of people, they just don't see that, whether it's their own conditioning, their wiring's a little bit, you know, they need fixed there. But with the Golden Globes, and you mentioned Oprah, you doing work on her network, and that speech she gave that really resonated with a lot of people. And the message I took from that, she really wanted to get the point across about unifying. There shouldn't be a line in the sand about men versus women sort of thing. What's your stance on that? And the words that she had used, you watched that. Were you there?
I wasn't there, but I was watching it.
Yeah, she goes, when that new day dawns, it will be because a lot of magnificent women and some pretty phenomenal men. Now, with your team and everything that you're doing with Vision, what you want to impact the masses, talk about that, the importance of, you know, maybe not dividing people.
Yeah, I'm not a feminist, I wouldn't say. I never have been. Even when I was boxing, you know, I thought of you know, I didn't think of me as a woman boxing. I just thought of me as a boxer, even though I know that, you know, some of the limits and struggles that I would have as a female. But, you know, even now, I mean, I don't know if you guys normally curse, so excuse me, but I mean, there's assholes. And, you know, but there's assholes that are women and there's assholes that are men, you know, and there have been women that have abused men. You know, it doesn't happen quite as often, I'm sure, but you know, so we can't just with this whole everything that's going on in our world right now. But I mean, I'm just looking at everything thinking, wow, times are really changing right before our eyes. And, you know, I think that times are changing in a lot of ways because we're shining a light on a lot of different situations and people are becoming stronger, which is great, you know. But I definitely have never been one of these women that's just like, yeah, you know, forget the guys and did it, because we need each other. I truly believe that. That's why God created man, God created woman. We have our strengths and we have our weaknesses and we're to work together, you know. And I believe in letting men be men and letting women be women. So that's just because that's the way we were created to be. So And you know, we work together as a team, just as if you're in a business relationship. One person's strong here and one person's strong there. They come together and make beautiful music together. You know what I mean? So that's how I feel like it should be in our society. Yes, women need to be given more opportunities because there's some really, really great, strong women out there, you know, that are looked at differently or held back just because of the fact that they're a woman. You know, so that's obviously not gonna fly in these times and going forward. So, and I think that, you know, like I said, times have changed a lot for the better, but there's a lot more to do. And I thought that Oprah's speech obviously was inspiring and amazing and wonderful. But, you know, now there's still more work that needs to be done consistently ahead. And as she said, we need those men to make the changes. We can't make them on our own. So, you know, she said some great words, and I was like, man, I wish, I mean, cause that's how I feel, but yeah. I, you know, she put it together so eloquently. So go Oprah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. In terms of opportunities and growing together, let's talk a little bit about your podcast, Layla. Can we, you know, I've been listening for quite a while now, but I was just really intrigued of exactly the origins of the podcast and how it all came together.
So I have over the years, done a lot of different shows that I've hosted once I stopped boxing, got on television, but never, you know, it's either scripted or it's just kind of hosting where there's lines that are given, never really able to talk about the things that I really want to talk about. And, you know, I'm really passionate about health and wellness in a holistic way.
Yeah.
I'm actually in nutrition school, which I recently just had to start over again because I fell so far behind and I just really want to grasp all of it. But, you know, it's a holistic approach to nutrition. And I was like, you know, it'd be really great to make an extension of my brand doing this podcast where I can interview people and talk about the things that I want to talk about in depth, you know. So that's what's cool about podcasting. As you know, you could talk about anything, have anybody on and do things your way where you don't have that opportunity in a lot of other, you know, media outlets. So that's pretty much it. But it's very broad and I'm still figuring things out and learning as I go, because as you also know, podcasts take a lot of work. And I knew that going in. But it's kind of like my little project where I didn't really involve anybody else, you know, from my team. So it's like me and Podcast One, and I kind of come up with, you know, they pitch you on different people and I come up with certain topics and things. But trying to do the podcast in between everything else I do has been a challenge. But because I love it, you know, I continue to put out the podcast consistently every week. So, you know, and the people who listen to it, I know, are very loyal to the podcast. So, you know, it's like you do it for them, you know, because they're waiting for that podcast to come out every Thursday. So it's really interesting. And I think you can just learn so much, and you have so many opportunities now to be driving or doing whatever it is you do, you know, whether you're cycling or whatever, and just be listening to a podcast. So I love it. Yeah, I love the world of podcasts.
You mentioned the nutrition. You're educating yourself on that. I don't know if you've heard of her. Maybe you have. I highly recommend Dr. Rhonda Patrick. Have you heard of her?
Okay, no, I haven't. Okay, let me write that down.
Yeah, Dr. Rhonda Patrick. Her brand is called Found My Fitness, and she's a PhD in nutritional sciences. And she's based out of Berkeley, and she's done a really famous study on the centenarians, people who live to 100, and she outlined the factors, all utilizing extreme dry heat with recovery. But her most recent studies were on fats and the importance of that main macronutrient with our longevity, with our cognitive function and ability. So my favorite part about podcasting is having conversations like this and being able to share information. So if you're interested, definitely reach out to Dr. Rhonda Patrick. You guys could find value in each other.
Oh, yeah, I love it, especially with the topic of fats. Because
very important.
Neurology. Yeah, yeah, and I've already incorporated, but I was also trying the ketogenic diet for a while. I fell off the wagon, but I want to get back on it because it's just really good for your brain. And being that I was a boxer, and like I said, sometimes my memory is a little faulty. I was like, you know, I really need to get on top of this before it escalates into something else, you know. So I'll check her out. Thank you.
You should check out Dom D. Agostino as well. He's the guy behind
keto stuff. PhD in ketogenic dieting. He works with NASA, and he studies humans under very stressful scenarios. And in those moments of like fight or flight, it's the fats that we're using to impact our cognitive function in those scenarios. So Dr. Dom D. Agostino is another one.
I got that. Dom D. Agostino. Okay, cool. See? That made this whole podcast.
We got your back. Layla, final question. Me and Johnny are really intrigued about the nickname She Be Stinging. Where'd you get that from?
I love it.
Oh, my God. I fought that name for so long. And I have not fully accepted it even now. I just kind of was like, fine. But I had this cut man, really eccentric cut man named Cassius Green. He would love that I was even talking about him right now. He's older. He's like from my dad's generation, right?
That's awesome.
He's a cut man. The cut man is the guy in your corner that if you get cut, he fixes your face, he gives you your water, all of that kind of stuff. Very important. And he was there like when I first came into the boxing gym on my own. And, you know, he's been a friend of mine ever since. But anyway, he one day just was like, she be stinging. She be stinging. Like, no. He's like, that's going to be your nickname. I was like, I don't want a nickname. I don't want any corny nickname, you know? So, but he just started putting it on T-shirts. And he's like that guy that'll go get T-shirts made. And it'll be like a big picture of me in the front, my arms folded. And then he actually has like cubic zirconias in the earring of the shirt, like in the ear hole, like flinging. And then a She Be Stinging. And so then people just started calling, because he worked with a lot of different fighters and people know him in the industry. And people just started calling, saying that. And the ring announcer started saying it. I was like, how does that even make sense?
It's not even logical.
It's like a saying, you know, opposed to a nickname, you know, it's just like, you know, She Be Stinging. So, oh my God. But the crazy thing is that that's what I ended up naming my corporation.
Wow.
You know, so I have checks. Like when I write a check, people are like, oh, what is this? This is cute. And I'm like, You know, but yeah. So. Yeah, funny.
Well, Layla, we really appreciate you joining us today. Before we let you go online, everyone get following Layla. She's at LaylaAli.com, Facebook, Layla Ali. Her Twitter and Instagram is at The Real Layla Ali. Big one, her cookbook, Food for Life, will be available on the 23rd of January. We'll put the pre-order link in the show notes, but you can get all that at Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, Books A Million, on iBook. And also, get following her podcast, Layla Ali Lifestyles, which you can find on iTunes and Podcast One.
Thank you so much, Layla Ali. We really appreciate
you
sharing space with us. This was awesome.
I appreciate it. And one more thing I just want to say. Today, this evening, I'm getting ready to unleash this pre-sale thing, and I have this great incentive where I have a 7-day detox exclusive for anyone who purchases the book in advance. So all they got to do is follow me on social media and you get all the information on that. But thank you guys so much for the conversation. I have fun. And I'm definitely going to look up those people, Dr. Rhonda Patrick and Dom D'Agostino.
Excellent.
Check them out.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. And Johnny, that was Layla Ali, man.
That was awesome. The energy she gave us, it was just super flowy, man. That was awesome sitting down with her.
Yeah, I love people like Layla. And because I follow her as well, it's great to hear it in her own perspective sometimes. You know, we got some good questions and her answers were brilliant. So I'm really, really grateful for her coming on.
I kept hearing her dad's voice too. Like just how she spoke. She spoke like in poetry. She spoke in song. And
it's hard not to, but because they do. Is it like a southern accent? Because you're from America. Is it more of a southern or country sort of accent that they have?
There is a slight twang. He was from Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
Louisville. Yeah. So it is slight. It is, you know, it's only about an 8-hour drive from my hometown. But America has those. There's different accents in different regions. But just her tempo, it was like she was dancing. And then I kept thinking, I was like, man, I wish I would have saw your, you know, even watch her fight in her prime or watch her dad fight in her prime. And you get why that last name has so much resonance with people because she has that thing.
Yeah, it's just focused and funny. I think she's like an unnatural kind funny. Of comedian little bit.
Dropping F-bombs on the show, that's what I love.
Yeah, I love that, Ali.
But that was awesome, kid.
So guys, I'm sure that you enjoyed that. So if you could do us a favor, just tell one person about the show. I'm sure that who wouldn't want to listen to Layla Ali? You know, it was a great chat, and I really feel a lot of people can get a lot out of that.
Yeah, my mom's waiting for this one to come out. So Rosie, this one was
hello,
for you.
Rosie.
Yep.
Well, Johnny, another great one, and we will catch you next week.
Yeah, TK 182 was a fun one. Layla Ali, you guys support the cause. We'll catch you soon.
All right, peace, guys.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.